Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we're going to be talking about some serious issues raised by the shooting of Alfredo Longo last week by an El Cajon police officer. We'll tell you about some efforts already underway by the city to improve its responses to people suffering mental health crises and get body cameras for police. But the city also rejected establishing a Citizens Police Oversight Review Board before last week's fatal shooting. Lemon Grove is the latest community to undergo spraying for mosquitoes that could carry the Zika virus. We'll have some information on what you should know about spraying and how you can help prevent the spread of Zika virus in our region. Later, we'll be talking about another issue with the El Cajon police force, a shortage of women in the ranks, and a history of sexual harassment that may be dissuading women from joining the force. We'll also share some statistics that may surprise you, documenting clear differences between use of force rates involving male and female police officers. Then we'll have news about a new bill to protect patients in nursing homes. And we'll share some news about a popular former radio personality locally who now needs help himself after a burglary in Mexico took everything he had, including his clothes and shoes. On Tribal Beat today, hear our interview with Bobby Wallace from Barona, who is organizing a caravan of relief supplies for the Standing Rock Sioux and members of other tribes standing up against an oil pipeline threatening their water supply in North Dakota. Bobby Wallace says this is really about protecting water supplies for all Americans. He's asking for donations of blankets, warm clothing, wood stoves, and other items to help the water protectors, as they call themselves, who aim to stay camped out all winter long. The caravan leaves Saturday morning, but there's still time to help, and we'll tell you how on today's show. On Destination East County, Jonathan Getz and Rebecca Williamson will tell you about all the most fun festivals and events coming up across East County this week, including the 60th Annual Melodrama in Julian, the German-American Club Oktoberfest in El Cajon, and a Grammy Award-winning country music star. Plus, hear about coming attractions, including a barbecue competition in Spring Valley, a fair trade shopping event in La Mesa, a Halloween pet adoption event at Grossmont Center, and a spooky array of other Halloween events from the College Area Boo Parade to Night of the Jack-O-Lanterns in Alpine, Haunt Fest on Main in El Cajon, and a Hollow Scream extravaganza in Spring Valley. Then on Green Scene, learn about the Climate Change Solutions Act just signed by Governor Jerry Brown and about a Safe Drinking Water Act just introduced in Congress. And finally, in one of our Best of East County episodes, we'll take you on the road to the Desert View Tower out along Interstate 8 in Hukumba Hot Springs, one of East County's most iconic landmarks. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The fatal shooting by El Cajon police of a black man whose family called for help reporting a mental health crisis has led to protests and police crackdowns over the past week. After an officer advanced toward Alfredo Longo, gun drawn at close range, Longo allegedly pointed a vaping pen or smoking device at the officer, who mistook it for a gun and fired the deadly shots. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells is no stranger to dealing with people in mental health crises. He's a clinician and former director of psychiatric intake services and a director of outpatient services. He voiced support and empathy for both Longo's family and for police in the city's carefully crafted official response, drawing criticism from both protesters and supporters of the police. But he set a tone that's far different than the confrontational one seen in other cities such as Ferguson following police shootings. Many may not be aware that El Cajon City Council has actually been trying to address problems with the mentally ill, including those who've been homeless for quite some time. At its June 14th meeting, the El Cajon Council voted to join San Diego County Mental Health and the Sheriff's Department in the East County Homeless Outreach Team, which embeds social workers with police and travels weekly to homeless hotspots. Councilmember Star Bales, who was once embedded with U.S. troops in Iraq as a translator, cast her vote in favor. "We can't just send these people up or downstream," she said in deliberations. "It's about getting people help." Though Alfredo Longo, the shooting victim in this case, was not homeless, Many mental illness calls in El Cajon do involve homeless people. El Cajon Council candidate Humbert Cabrera told East County Magazine that one reason to send social workers along with police when responding to calls regarding mental illness or transiency is to get people help. If you take a homeless person with mental issues to jail, they come back to the same street corner, their home, upon release, without treatment. Embedding mental health professionals can also be helpful when police are called to deal with a non-homeless person who is suffering a mental crisis. Olongo was reportedly having a mental breakdown after the loss of a friend, according to family. Some psychiatric experts have suggested that this less confrontational approach might have prevented Olongo's death. One social worker told East County Magazine that approaching a person in mental crisis with a gun drawn, as Officer Richard Gonzalez did, is apt to make that person feel threatened, and a person in mental crisis may react in an inappropriate or illogical way, as when Olongo pulled out a vaping pen and pointed it at police. Having a trained professional try to talk with the individual can sometimes diffuse a tense situation. Some have questioned why a psychiatric emotional response team, or PERT team, didn't greet Olongo instead of Officer Gonzalez, who had previously been demoted for harassment of a woman in the police department. Police have said that El Cajon's only PERT team was out on another call at the time Olongo's sister called police. It took 50 minutes for two police officers to arrive on scene without a PERT team member. Ironically, shortly before the shooting, the El Cajon Council had voted to reject a grand jury recommendation to establish a Citizens Police Oversight Committee that could independently investigate use of force complaints. The grand jury made that same recommendation to other East County cities as well, and all of them rejected the notion, claiming that use of force complaints had been rare and that oversight by citizens was not needed. Several candidates running for the El Cajon City Council in a debate this week did call for a Citizens Police Oversight Board to now be established, including Vicky Butcher, an African-American candidate who also called for increasing diversity of the police department and more community policing so that residents will know their police officers and officers will know the residents. Some critics of the Olongo shooting have called for body cameras for El Cajon police, but in fact on this issue the council was proactive. Council authorized purchase of body cameras for officers back on August 9th. According to several council members at that hearing, police body cameras can help improve everyone's behavior, officers and residents. The cameras did not arrive before the Olongo shooting, which was documented partially on a bystander's cell phone video and surveillance video. But body cameras for El Cajon police should provide valuable evidence if force is used by police in the future. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz with a health alert from the County of San Diego. County vector control crews hand-sprayed a neighborhood in Lemon Grove early this week to prevent invasive Aedes mosquitoes from spreading the Zika virus. The spraying is meant to protect public health in neighborhoods where Aedes mosquitoes and their larvae have been found near people who tested positive for the Zika virus. The Lemon Grove neighborhood becomes the sixth neighborhood in the county since August 19th that has met the spraying criteria and been sprayed. All of the people who have tested positive for Zika in San Diego County have traveled out of the country or been in close contact with a foreign traveler. No mosquitoes in San Diego County have tested positive for the Zika virus, but two invasive species of Aedes mosquitoes found in San Diego County can transmit Zika and other tropical diseases if they first bite an infected person. Aedes aegypti, the yellow fever mosquito, was found in San Diego in late 2014. Aedes albopictus, the Asian tiger mosquito, was found in late 2015. The hand spraying kills adult mosquitoes. Vector Control will continue to conduct trapping for mosquitoes in the area and nearby locations for several weeks. Vector Control officials went door-to-door in the Lemon Grove spraying area last Thursday, talking with residents, leaving door hanger notifications, and showing people how to keep mosquitoes from breeding in their homes and yards. The other neighborhoods where hand spraying has been done include South Park, Mount Hope Adams Avenue North, Grant Hill, and Skyline. The invasive Aedes mosquitoes have a specific feature that makes them literally as different as night and day from native mosquitoes. That is, they bite people during daylight hours, in addition to at dusk and dawn, not at night. Aedes mosquitoes are also smaller than native mosquitoes and have distinctive black and white markings. The National Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports that only about 20% of people who get infected with the Zika virus ever experience any illness. However, Zika virus has been linked to a severe birth defect, microcephaly, a condition where babies' heads and brains are smaller than normal. Trained county vector control technicians sprayed Pyrenome 25-5 in Lemon Grove earlier this week. Pyrenome is a pesticide derived from chrysanthemums that authorities say poses low risk to people and pets. It dissipates in roughly 20 to 30 minutes. However, the county is instructing residents in the spray areas to lessen exposure by taking these steps. Stay inside and bring pets indoors if possible. Close doors and windows and turn off fans that bring outdoor air inside. Cover fish ponds. Rinse fruits and vegetables from your garden with water before eating. Wipe down items such as toys and be sure to cover barbecue grills. Beekeepers are encouraged to shelter hives and habitats during treatments. You may resume normal activities 30 minutes after the treatment. The county urges everyone to follow its Prevent, Protect, Report guidelines. To prevent mosquito breeding, dump out items that can hold water both indoors and outdoors, such as plant saucers, rain gutters, buckets, garbage cans, toys, old tires, and wheelbarrows. Unlike native San Diego County mosquitoes, invasive Aedes species prefer to live around people, inside and outside homes and in backyards. They can breed in as little as a thimble full of water. A female mosquito lays 100 to 300 eggs at a time and could potentially lay up to 3,000 eggs in its lifetime. Mosquito fish, available for free by contacting the Vector Control Program, may be used to control mosquito breeding in backyard water sources, such as unused swimming pools, fountains, and horse troughs. Protect yourself from mosquito-borne illnesses by wearing long sleeves and pants or use insect repellent when outdoors. Make sure screens on windows and doors are in good condition and secured to keep insects out. Report if you are being bitten by mosquitoes during daylight hours or if you find mosquitoes that match the description of Aedes mosquitoes by contacting the Vector Control Program at 858-694-2888. For more information about mosquito-borne illnesses, go to San Diego County's Fight the Bite website.
The El Cajon police officer who fired the shots that killed Alfred Alongo last week was Richard Gonzalez, the same officer embroiled in a sexual harassment scandal last year. Officer Gonzalez pulled out a gun moments after arriving on scene and advanced toward Alongo, who backed up, and instead of obeying orders to take hands out of his pocket, withdrew a silver vaping device used for smoking with a black holder attached. He assumed a shooter's stance, according to a photo released by police, and pointed it at the officer with both hands. The officer then fired at close range, reportedly mistaking that device for a gun. Could a culture that encouraged women officers to join the police force have perhaps prevented this tragedy before Alongo pulled out a vaping device mistaken for a gun? That may sound sexist, but the fact is, multiple studies over 40 years have shown that women police officers are better at defusing tense situations, such as domestic violence incidents or mental health cases, and have significantly lower use of force rates than male officers, the Washington Post recently reported. For example, a 2002 study by the National Center for Women in Policing of excessive force incidents in 7 major city police departments found that the average male officer is over 8.5 times more likely than his female counterpart to have an allegation of excessive force sustained against him, and 2 to 3 times more likely than the average female officer to have a citizen name him in a complaint of excessive force. But the El Cajon Police Department has long drawn criticism for tolerating sexual harassment and other sexual misconduct by its male officers toward women on the force and in the department offices. That is not a history conducive to attracting women seeking careers in law enforcement. Gonzalez was accused of texting nude photos of his genitals and making sexual propositions to a woman on the force seeking a 3-way tryst. He was demoted, but remains on the force despite 2 lawsuits filed by the woman, Tina Greer. Gonzalez was not charged, though such actions, if true, would be crimes. After a lawsuit with Greer was resolved, she returned to the force, but recently filed a new suit alleging continuing sexual harassment by Gonzalez. An investigation by East County Magazine last year found a long and lurid history of tolerance for sexual misconduct at the El Cajon Police Department. That includes multiple past settlements by the city to women who said they were sexually harassed, and yet their harassers all remained on the force. Other incidents dated back many years. One officer was convicted of having sex with the underage daughter of a female employee. Another was convicted of exchanging sexual favors with women he detained. An entire book has been published by a former El Cajon police officer about scandals rocking the department in the past, most of them sexual, from an officer allegedly sleeping with a witness to tales of parties with underage girls to a double murder involving two El Cajon police officers in a love triangle. Here's another interesting fact. Our probe also revealed that as of April of last year, only 9 of 122 sworn police officers at the El Cajon Police Department were female, although 55 of the 67 non-sworn staff are women. The number of officers is way below the national average. There were also no women in sworn management positions, although 4 did hold non-sworn management jobs. Now, the police department did outline its policies aimed at preventing sexual harassment in our April probe last year. The police chief at that time has since retired, and a new chief heads up the force. But the death of Olongo raises the question of whether a more diverse police force might have made a difference and saved Alfred Olongo's life. If a woman and a black officer had responded to the scene instead of two white male officers, might the situation have ended differently? Dan Gillian is the attorney for both Olongo's family and Tina Greer, the woman suing El Cajon for a second time over Officer Gonzalez's alleged actions. In an interview with Democracy Now!, a national radio show aired on KNSJ, Gillian stated, "It was over-the-top sexual harassment, something that would get anybody in this world, I would suspect, fired. But for whatever reason, the El Cajon Police Department decided to rally around, circle the wagons around then-sergeant Richard Gonzalez, and just demote him down and send him back to work with her, at which point he began continuing his harassment. Other officers would start making comments about her complaint about him because they didn't like that she violated the code of silence," the attorney claimed. Attorney Gillian called Gonzalez a cowboy who felt like he didn't have to follow the rules that said you can't send photographs of your penis to your subordinates, and he suggested that perhaps Officer Gonzalez may have decided to take the law into his own hands when responding to the scene in the Olongo shooting, although numerous law enforcement experts who had viewed the video agreed that once the device resembling a gun was drawn out, Officer Gonzalez was justified in his right to defend himself and protect people in a drive-thru line at a nearby restaurant who could have been in the line of fire if that had been a gun in Olongo's hands. Olongo, who came to the U.S. as a Ugandan refugee, had suffered great hardship in his life, fleeing violence with his family. But he also had several past criminal convictions here, including drug charges and illegally owning a firearm while he was a felon. After 2 of his convictions, the federal government sought unsuccessfully to deport him, 10 News reports. But El Cajon police have said the officers were not aware of those convictions before the shooting, and they acted only on the information in the dispatch calls and their observations at the scene. On the day of his death, family members have said Olongo suffered a breakdown mentally after the death of a friend. His sister called 911 seeking help 3 times. The dispatch calls reportedly identified that he was in a mental health crisis. The city's only psychiatric response emergency team was dispatched somewhere else that day. A second officer trained a taser on Olongo while Officer Gonzalez backed him up with a gun. When Olongo pulled out the vaping device resembling a weapon, both officers opened fire. The tragedy has raised many issues, including whether Olongo's race may have been a factor through implicit racism and whether more PERT teams are needed to respond to people suffering mental health crises. But it also raises one more serious question. Given how Officer Gonzalez advanced aggressively toward Olongo the moment he arrived, did the El Cajon Police Department's tolerance of harassment toward women contribute to the low rate of females on the force? If Alfred Olongo had encountered a female officer or anyone else with a caring, nurturing attitude, might he have responded differently and had his life saved instead of ended by gunfire? Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Medicare and Medicaid have announced a new rule prohibiting forced arbitration requirements at nursing homes that accept federal funds. The Alliance for Justice, which called for the ban, says forced arbitration denies patients and their families the right to go to court if wrongdoing occurs. The group's spokesperson, Nan Aaron, states the abuse of this practice at nursing homes where residents and families may be ill or in distress and unaware they have signed away their right to go to court if they have a complaint has always been especially egregious. Aaron applauded the action by Medicare and Medicaid to put nursing home residents' safety first and for joining the growing ranks of government agencies, including the Department of Defense and Department of Labor, that have already banned forced arbitration in contracts with their vendors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Rebecca Williamson.
A GoFundMe site has been set up to help former San Diego Talk radio show host Stacy Taylor, also a longtime Alpine resident, a radio personality for multiple stations, most recently the liberal KLSD station on Air America, posted on his Facebook page Sunday that his house in Rosarito, Mexico was burglarized. Taylor wrote that the thieves got everything of value, including computers, jewelry, a camera with 10 years of memories, and all of his clothing and shoes. Most heartbreaking was theft of an antique gold pocket watch that belonged to his grandmother. It was engraved to Isabella Smith on her birthday, 1887, from her brother. Barbara Cumming, a longtime political activist in Spring Valley, started a GoFundMe site to help Taylor. She writes, "San Diego has been enriched immensely by having Stacy here fighting the good fight for decades." She notes that Taylor moved to Mexico after the radio station failed and he lost his job. There, he lives a simple life. Cumming met Taylor during an anti-war protest outside then-President George W. Bush's ranch in Crawford, Texas, where Cindy Sheehan, mother of a slain U.S. soldier, was encamped seeking answers to why the Gulf War had been started. Cumming recalls, "Stacy somehow got the money, came there to support us, and broadcast from there, bringing much awareness to the anti-war community." She concludes, "We need to do this ASAP for Stacy. Please, every small amount will help him get back on his feet." Within the first 2 hours after her GoFundMe site went live, $1,600 had been raised towards a goal of $5,000. You can find a link to it at eastcountymagazine.org or on Stacy Taylor's page on Facebook. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the network for social justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, I am deeply honored to have with us our very special guest today, Bobby Wallace with the Barona Band of Mission Indians. Bobby, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for the invite. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, today, we're going to be talking about Bobby's efforts to lead a relief caravan to assist the Native Americans that are in Cannonball, North Dakota, where they are protesting against the Dakota Access Pipeline. They call themselves Water Defenders, and this is, I understand, the largest Native American gathering since Wounded Knee. Is that correct, Bobby?
Yes, it sure is. There's hundreds of tribes out there in Standing Rock right now supporting the efforts. We are traveling there on the 8th. And we're taking winter supplies, which is blankets, sleeping bags, warm clothing, and food for these people that are out there. And they're going to stay pretty much the whole winter.
Wow.
And yeah, till whenever there's something agreed upon so the pipeline doesn't run through their water system.
Tell us what's at stake here with this pipeline for the Standing Rock Sioux, and for that matter, for all of the Native American tribes that are turning out to show solidarity.
You know, I think that this is going to show precedence. I think, now personally myself, and I'm no legal advisor, but personally myself, with the feedback that I'm getting from many, many people, is that this is going to be a precedent. So if they can go and put pipelines adjacent or on top of major river systems, that it could happen anywhere. So this really isn't a Native American issue. This is an all-American issue for people across the United States, and we really need to take a good look at it right now.
True, because although it's Native Americans leading the opposition to this oil pipeline, you know, if there's a break in it, and there's certainly been hundreds of oil pipeline breaks across the U.S. in recent years, it would affect drinking supplies potentially all throughout the Missouri River and its tributaries.
Yeah, drinking supplies, you know, as you know, we as humans need water to survive, and building this thing upstream, if you look at the river carefully and follow it down, you know, there's farmland, there's people that make a living on fishing, game, drink from the rivers, and the river shoots off into other little rivers. So let's just say there was a break or a spill, with the amount of pressure on that pipeline, there would be tons and tons of oil that would go down and distribute through all those little tributaries.
Yeah, it is absolutely devastating to think about. So how long has the encampment in Cannonball been going on now?
It's been months. You know, it was brought to my attention by one of our elders, Sylvia Sherbert. She was on a trip to go to one of the powwows, and her and her friend had heard about it and went over there. And at that time, there wasn't really too much of public attention on it. I had heard nothing about it.
Yeah. The media was really silent on it.
They were very silent on it, but there was these dedicated group of people that had been out there since day one, staying at this camp. So Sylvia messaged me. She took pictures, told me about it. And I had worked with the Longest Walk 5, War on Drug Abuse and Domestic Violence,
which is a cross-country walk that Native Americans have organized. And
Sure. Yes, it is. It's a trek across to bring awareness of, you know, again, this, like, domestic violence and drug abuse isn't everybody's problem also. So I had gotten tons of messages of people asking me when I was going to go. And anyways, with the help, spearheading of it with, Blue Eagle from the Viejas Band, the Res Riders, which is a motorcycle group, a Native American motorcycle group, we took out lots and lots of supplies supported by the people here on the west side. And that was people from the desert, people from Baja, people up north, and it was a total tribal deal. We had 9 band members of the Kumeyaay that went with us on our journey out there. So it was a spiritual moment when we went out there. We were known by everybody that we were coming. They came and gave us hugs.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, what was that like when you pulled into the camp and they saw these supplies coming from the other side of the nation?
They expressed their gratitude. They're proud people. They expressed their gratitude. They knew us by name. They came up, gave us hugs, and hundreds of people came and told us, you know what, you guys, thank you for coming. We know people all the way on the other side by the Pacific Ocean cares about us. And it was such a feeling. It was a feeling that almost made me cry because these people knew that people on this side have the love for them and the love for their water and the earth.
So this has really grown since you were back there, I understand. A lot has happened since then. When did you leave?
It was about a month and a half ago.
Yeah. So since then, there were some arrests made not long after you left there, and it really made it all over the internet. It went viral. It was pretty rough to watch. It was private security guards hired by the company building the Dakota Access Pipeline, and they sicked dogs on the people that were standing up there. You know, there were people who were standing in the way of bulldozers, putting their lives on the line, literally, but they wound up with dogs sicked on them, and they were maced or pepper sprayed, and this was not police. These were private security guards at the time that were doing that.
Yes, you know, they hired strong arms to come in there and try to keep people at their bay. You know, everything has to be on their terms, but, you know, this is a free country. People have the right to express their freedom of speech and freedom of religion. There is no respect with those guys.
Yeah.
Anybody who sicks a dog on a little kid, shame on those guys.
Yeah.
Or a grown human being, for that matter. You know, there is no respect. You know, when you can go over and desecrate someone's burial ground or graveyard, there is no respect there. You know, they need to take a look at alternatives for this.
So another wrinkle to this is that the Standing Rock Sioux and I believe another tribe had tried to file for an emergency injunction to halt this. Even after those attacks, the court refused to grant the injunction, although the lawsuit itself is still moving forward and they could potentially win. But meanwhile, President Obama was overseas and a reporter in Germany or somewhere asked him about this issue. And he came back and he issued some emergency orders himself to stop the pipeline construction for right now. Do you think that all of the demonstrations and the actions by the Native Americans had an influence on what the president did. And how do you feel about the actions he's taken so far? Has it gone far enough? Is there more that you want the president or Congress to do?
You know what? There is more. There has to be. People need to sit down and they need to go back to that table and they need to come up with better solutions. Right now, it doesn't seem like things really work in the favor of the people. It just so happened that day we had the rally down in San Diego at the federal courthouse was the day, you know, Obama stepped in, which was great on that day. But we must keep pushing forward. This is, these are issues that could be happening everywhere. And it is happening everywhere. Yeah. It's not just Standing Rock.
True.
Do your research, people. It's happening all over the United States.
Yeah, and it isn't only oil pipelines as bad as those are. We've seen similar issues with, for example, some of the wind projects, which is clean energy, but we've seen a lot of controversy, for example, in Ocotillo when they wanted to put it over sacred sites for the Native Americans, over ancient geoglyphs that had been there for thousands of years, sacred places where people come to pray, ancestral burial grounds, and so forth. And it didn't seem to matter what was said in the hearings leading up to this. They pretty much ignored the Native American concerns, as well as concerns of environmentalists and some other folks, and just put the project there no matter what.
Well, you figure, you know, they think because they have the executive order, they can just go do what they want. And that is the truth. They can go do what they want. But consulting with the Native Americans, figuring out where their ancestral sites are, I was part of that. I was out there in Ocotillo when we had a little gathering at the medicine wheel, which hadn't happened between the Kumeyaay and the Kokopas and the Kwitsans for over a thousand years. And wow. We were out there together, you know, supporting it. But through the executive order, now when you drive down there at night, what do you see? You see a bunch of red lights.
Yeah, it's awful. 500 foot tall. Things with towers with flashing red lights on.
Towers and flashing red lights. There were bones that were discovered right around where some of those towers were at. It makes no sense if somebody were to go to the cemeteries in Virginia or Maryland and start bulldozing over them and put a wind tower. Somebody would have to answer for that.
Yeah, it would never happen at Arlington National Cemetery, but that's effectively what they're doing to the Native American burial grounds and sacred sites.
Well, look at down there at Silver Strand. They just, they could have moved this project over 143 yards, but they chose to actually just move forward. We had guys from the Navy out there actually flipping. They were doing wrong gestures to the women and kids were out there. And, you know, we had a protest out there because they were digging up our bones.
For those not familiar with it, that's a Navy SEAL training facility that was being expanded on Coronado's Silver Strand. And again, it was another of these projects where there was disrespect shown to the Native Americans who only wanted it moved a fairly insignificant distance to preserve a burial ground.
You know, people know that there's, you know, issues of national security, which is fine, but.
Yeah.
You know, when you start digging up somebody's family that's 7,000 years old, those are our family's remains. In crushing the bones and just doing what you want and not showing any respect. And it could be moved over. That tells me and that tells everybody the policies need to change and people are smart.
So as I understand it, that's what Standing Rock is really all about. It's about changing the process, not just for this one oil pipeline, bad though it may be, but for all projects in the future to give more voice to Native Americans and not just to listen, but to actually hear what they're saying. There's a lot of lip service given to this term about listening sessions. And I know I've had some Native American friends tell me they went to some and it was supposed to be a listening session by the federal government. And at one point, they said, well, how come nobody's taking notes? And is this being recorded? And it wasn't. And they said, well, then how is anyone going to hear what we say, let alone do anything about it? So it does seem there's a lot of problems there. Back to Standing Rock. Now, more recently, last week or so, there was another round of arrests. Do you have any updates on what happened there?
Yeah, I sure do. There was some people out, you know, having a ceremony, and they didn't want them there. Plane flew over, dropped some tear gas on those guys. You know, the people weren't happy that happened. And thank God that the wind was blowing the wrong way or they didn't have good aim. because it kind of went over them. And there were weapons drawn. There was a rounding up of people. And again, it goes back to disrespect. They're pushing people around. They don't need to push people around.
And that was a religious ceremony that was interrupted.
It's a religious ceremony. And you know what? That's going against the law. We have religious freedom. Every single one of us in the United States have a religious freedom. We take into consideration everybody's freedoms.
But it seems like the more that the people there that are encamped against this, that are taking this stand, the more that there is aggressive action against them like that, the more it empowers or encourages more people from around the country, Native Americans and non-Native Americans, I might add, to show up there in solidarity. Do you think this is something that's just going to keep growing and growing and growing until action is taken?
I think so. I think the censorship that they're doing right now, you know, with the big news, I think it's going underground with the Facebooks and the Instagrams so much that the news has to probably come and pick up on it sometime. And I know there was other news channels that were starting to pick up on it, but we'll see how things go in the future. When I first went to Standing Rock, there was like 1,500 people there or so. There was a lot of people. And then the camp has grown anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 people. And it just depends on, you know, people's schedules or time off. And these people aren't just Native American. They're everyday people. I have a young woman who actually is from Saudi Arabia. They had a ceremony over in Saudi Arabia, and it's called the water ceremony. And her father is actually bringing some of the water back. They're going to fly out to Standing Rock with us. And meet us out there on the 11th for a ceremony. And they're bringing water from Saudi Arabia to perform this ceremony. So it's not just here. It's everywhere. We had people praying for us down at the bottom of South America holding the Standing Rock. You know, they were doing a traditional ceremony. And these people, I mean, they're in the hills, but they know about it. You know, people in Saudi Arabia know about it.
Around the world, really.
Around the
Facebook.
World. Australia, Germany.
Yeah, there you go. So tell us what exactly is needed to help these people the most. You spoke recently at Activists San Diego, which is the parent nonprofit that owns KNSJ Radio, full disclosure there. And you spoke about some of the actual needs with winter coming on of items that people can donate to help the cause. What do you need?
We need, or they need, sleeping bags that can withstand the cold, canvas tents, blankets, wood stoves. You know, we're taking out some wood stoves that they're actually going to put inside their teepees, and canned food.
Now, you're leaving Saturday. What time?
We're leaving at approximately 8 a.m., just depending on supplies and how they're coming in.
Okay, so folks that are listening to this show on Friday can give you a call Friday night and bring things out. Where can they bring them, and how can they get in touch with you?
They can call me at area code 619-318-2643, or they can drop them off at 2004 Acuna Way, and that's A-K-U-U-N-Y-A-A-Y, and then Way, W-A-Y, Lakeside, California, and that's up in Verona. So, but we can pretty much meet anywhere to pick up supplies.
Yeah, that's out in Lakeside. And I understand too that if people want to donate, make a financial donation so that you can buy supplies that may still be needed or contribute to a legal defense fund, can they also get in touch with you about the specifics of how to do that?
Sure. Anybody can get in touch with me about anything concerning Standing Rock. We're on a mission to help these people and to help ourselves as human beings of this planet.
Bobby, I understand that there is an event coming up also in San Diego after you return from Standing Rock, and that'll be yet another way that people can learn more, get involved, and support the effort. Tell us where and when that will be.
Sure. That'll be Sunday, October 30th from approximately 11 to 4, and that will be across from the roller coaster at Mission Bay.
Very good. I want to thank you so much, Bobby, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
In Yuma.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Rebecca Williamson.
And this is Jonathan Getz, guest hosting Destination East County.
This week's Destination East County includes the 60th Annual Melodrama in Julian, the German-American Club Oktoberfest, and a Grammy award-winning country music star in El Cajon.
Plus, we'll tell you about upcoming attractions, including a barbecue competition in Spring Valley, a fair trade shopping event in La Mesa, a Halloween pet adoption event at Grossmont Center, and a spooky array of Halloween events from the College Area Boo Parade to Night of the Jack-O-Lanterns in Alpine, Haunt Fest on Main in El Cajon, and a Hallascream extravaganza in Spring Valley.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The Julian Triangle Club presents its 60th annual melodrama, The Stalwart Surveyor, otherwise known as The Man Who Sank the Cuyamac Afloat. This was the first melodrama that was written specifically for and about the town of Julian 49 years ago. The story is loosely based on the history of Julian and features a heroine in distress, with the handsome, robust hero rescuing her from the evil villain in a tale about actual events surrounding a property dispute that took place in the Julian Cuyamaca Lake area. That includes an evildoer trying to acquire land through shady means, and the surveyor who persevered to save the land for its rightful owners. Of course, there is romance brewing and tense moments when the danger lurks and all seems lost. For details and tickets, visit julianmelodrama.com.
The German-American Club in El Cajon continues its annual Oktoberfest on the second weekend, October 7th through the 9th. This Oktoberfest features a band from Germany, authentic German food from Bavarian pastries to an ox and a spit, plus German beers and folk dancer. Plus, you can dance to oompa music, polkas, and waltzes, and let the children enjoy a kid's zone. Learn more at GermanClubSanDiego.org.
Marty Stewart, a member of the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, Tennessee, and a multiple Grammy Awards winner, will bring his band's blend of traditional country, honky-tonk, and rockabilly music to downtown El Cajon at Prescott Promenade Park on Friday, October 7th from 5 to 8 p.m. Stewart is a former lead guitarist for Johnny Cash, played bluegrass mandolin for Lester Flatt at age 13, and later performed with Willie Nelson and other well-known country stars before gaining fame on his own. Bring your dancing shoes to dance the night away under the stars. For more information, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Heartland Fire invites you to bring the kids to an open house at Fire Station 6 in El Cajon on October 8th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can meet the firefighters, see emergency vehicles, safety and health displays, and more. For more information, you can go to heartlandfire.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The Alpine Education Foundation invites you to Night of the Jack-O-Lanterns at the Alpine Creek Town Center on Thursday, October 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. Festivities will include a pumpkin carving demonstration from master carver Gene Granada, activities for kids, and food tasting provided by the center's restaurants. Tickets are required for food and beer tasting. Net proceeds for the event will benefit Alpine students. For tickets and details, visit the Alpine Education Association website at aef4kids.net.
Over 100 dogs, puppies, cats, kittens, and rabbits from local rescue groups will be at Grossmont Center looking for a loving home on October 15th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. You will be able to meet and play and learn more about each pet. Plus, if you find your perfect match, you can adopt and take away your new furry friend home this Halloween. This event will take place in the West Court by Choose Fitness and Fuddruckers. For a full list of animal rescue organizations that will be participating, visit grossmontcenter.com.
The holiday season is coming, and you're invited for a fair trade shopping event on Sunday, October 16th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at St. Martin of Tours Parish in La Mesa. Home decor, jewelry, crafts, and more will be among the fair trade gift items available.
Fire up your barbecues and get your best recipes ready. The 7th Annual Spring Valley Tailgate Barbecue Festival is looking for participants in its annual barbecue competition. The event is sponsored by Cali Comfort Restaurant and the Marcel Walsef Youth Empowerment Organization to raise funds for youth sports. The barbecue competition will be held on Sunday, October 16th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Troy Street in Spring Valley outside Cali Comfort Restaurant. Besides sampling barbecue, you can also visit a beer garden, shop at street vendors, enjoy live music, and plenty of family fun. For info on how to enter your amateur barbecue team, call 619-490-0684 or visit CaliComfortBarbecue.com.
The 5th annual Haunt Fest on Main will take place on Main Street in downtown El Cajon on October 21st from 5 to 10 p.m. Costume contests will be held on the Main Street stage. There will also be carnival rides, crafts, games, a car show, candy challenge, kids zone with outdoor movies, face painting, a pumpkin patch, inflatables, rock wall, and performances by local dance groups. In addition, this Halloween-themed event features live music on two stages, including Out of the Ashes with Linda Ray from 5 to 7:15 p.m., and the amazing 80s All-Stars from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. For more information, you can check out hauntfest.org.
On Halloween weekend, Sequon Golf Resort will host Stoney's Boo Bash on Thursday, October 27th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Proceeds will benefit needy children in East County through Stoney's Kids Legacy. A costume is optional, but you can enjoy a cocktail hour with hors d'oeuvres, live and silent actions, dinner, a no-host bar, and a costume contest. It promises to be a spectacular evening. For tickets and reservations, you can visit StoneyKidsLegacy.org.
Celebrating its 12th year, the Boulevard Boo Parade will be held Saturday, October 29th, starting at 10 a.m., with over 70 entries of live entertainment marching on 1 mile of El Cajon Boulevard. The parade will entertain you with spooky ghouls, goblins, ghosts, and witches to fill you with the Halloween spirit. Special guests from the past 12 years include local and national celebrities and political personalities and a grand marshal to bring a smile to all who attend. Hosted by the College Area Business District, the Boulevard Boo Parade attracts thousands of spectators. You can best view the Boo Parade along the south side of El Cajon Boulevard between Rolando Boulevard and 60th Street. For more information, visit collegeareabid.com.
Saps at Sea, a local Laurel and Hardy club, invites you to experience that wonderful time of the fear, the return of the Hollow Scream Sap Extravaganza on October 29th at Williams Hall Trinity Church in Spring Valley. The event includes showings of the spooky cartoon Pink Plasma, in which the Pink Panther arrives at Dracula's castle for a good night's sleep. Then, in the film Habeas Corpus, Laurel and Hardy arrive at the home of a mad scientist who needs a body from the local cemetery for his experiments. As a special added treat, Russ Peck will perform a live musical score with sound effects. There will also be a surprise guest comedian and a showing of the Laurel and Hardy murder case, plus more. You can come in costume to win a prize and enjoy treats. For more chilling details, you can visit sapsatsea.com.
Scotty's Scare Trail, one of East County's most haunting attractions, will be open at the abandoned Marshall Scotty's Amusement Park in El Cajon for a full month every Thursday through Sunday, now through October 30th, between 7 to 11 p.m. The trail is rumored to be haunted by the ghosts of former park employees. This year, you can see the bumper car carnage, the slaughter trailer, and the haunted park offices. Visit the frightening Ferris wheel and brace yourself as you walk through the remains of the Death Coaster. Organizers promise that Marshall Scary Scotty's Scare Trail is packed full of spine-tingling, heart-pounding effects that are so real they will keep you screaming for your life as you try to find your way out. For more information, you can visit ScottysScareTrail.com. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Climate change groups are applauding a new bill just signed by Governor Jerry Brown that would make it state policy to promote the role of land and soil in scrubbing the air of excess carbon. The Natural and Working Lands Climate Solution Act, Senate Bill 1386, writes into law that agencies must consider ways to promote good soil health on forests, farms, rangelands, wetlands, deserts, parks, and other open spaces. State Senator Lois Wolk, who wrote the bill, says with proper management, microbes in the soil can actually clean the air and lock greenhouse gases underground through a process called carbon sequestration.
People generally don't think of agriculture and grazing lands as working to reduce climate change, but in fact, these lands can absorb carbon out of the atmosphere much the same way that trees do and create healthier soils, healthier air.
Groups like Defenders of Wildlife, which sponsored the bill, say there are many ways to help the land trap more carbon, including planting more trees and grasses, using fewer nitrogen-based fertilizers, turning the soil less often, and keeping natural areas undisturbed. Lewis Bloomberg with the Nature Conservancy hopes this new policy will be copied worldwide.
Many of the countries that signed the Paris Climate Agreement now recognize that the land base can provide climate benefits, but they're not sure how to do that. And so California is once again taking the lead and setting the policy to use land protection as a way to combat climate change.
California has set a goal of reducing greenhouse gases in the atmosphere by 40% below 1990 levels by 2030. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. A bill just introduced in Congress would increase funding to improve safety of public drinking water systems in California and across the nation, setting the stage for stronger warnings about contaminated tap water. The proposed Safe Drinking Water Act amendments have drawn praise from the Environmental Integrity Project. Introduced after the Flint, Michigan lead-contaminated drinking water crisis, the bill would require the Environmental Protection Agency to notify residents annually about drinking water quality in consumer confidence reports. The bill would direct the EPA to issue regulations within 2 years that increase the effectiveness and understandability of consumer confidence reports. Poor warnings by states to residents with contaminated drinking water were documented in a pair of recent reports issued by the Environmental Integrity Project. Those were titled Arsenic in California Drinking Water and Don't Drink the Water. The reports revealed that over 55,000 Californians and 51,000 Texans have drinking water that for years has violated federal health limits for arsenic, a carcinogen that might also damage the IQ of young children. Warner Springs School District in San Diego is among the districts in California with arsenic-tainted drinking water. In addition to urging notification of consumers when water is contaminated, the Environmental Integrity Project is calling on federal and state governments to provide funding through grants for water filtration systems to improve safety of drinking water. The Safe Drinking Water Act amendments of 2016 would also remove hurdles that slow the EPA's setting of standards for other drinking water contaminants and set deadlines for development of new federal standards on known dangers, including lead, percolate, perfluorinated compounds, and algal toxins. In addition, the proposed legislation would provide grants for replacement of lead service lines in schools and communities, as well as funding to protect drinking water systems from saltwater intrusion and other contamination resulting from climate change and extreme weather. The bill also has language to help low-income people replace privately owned lead service lines in their homes, and the proposal would provide funds that local water utilities could use to give eligible homeowners assistance of up to $10,000 for lead line replacement.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hucumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hucumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hucumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza-Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though, and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.